Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. It's great to see everyone here. Thank you so much. It's good to be together, and we're going to be continuing a series we started last week called Rushed. And we began by looking at this story in the life of Jesus where he feeds the 5,000. And many of you, if you were not here, you're familiar with that story. And at the very end of that story, there's one verse, and it says that Jesus, perceiving that they were going to take him by force and make him king, he withdrew to the mountain to pray. He withdrew to a mountain by himself. We assumed he was praying. At least that's what I assumed he was doing. And when we think about this, it's this idea that there's this thing that's happening that's pushing us along in our lives, and the pace just gets faster and faster and faster. We tend to think of God's will as being some destination, some point on some roadmap of our lives in which we will finally be free or happy or fulfilled or whatever. That's sort of what we think that God's will. All of our prayers are designed to that end, and that's sort of how we see. So it makes sense in our Western efficient culture that if we are here, the quickest way from here to here is a straight line, and we are very intolerant of anything else. When we concluded last week, I asked you to do a couple of things. Number one is I asked you to stop and consider, what are the things in your life that are important? This, by default, means that if there are more things than you can get done, then you have to begin to rank them. You have to say something is more important than something else. So I asked you to do that last week. We talked about the fact that once we begin to see this and understand this, this is what gives us a sense of importance. This list is probably based on this thing, at least ideally it would be. But the problem is lots of things can get on this list that we don't plan for or prepare for or even think about. Last week, Florence was nowhere on our radar, and now it's all we're talking about, right? It is now on our list. In fact, someone said earlier, if no one's in church, it's because everybody's at Costco buying up all the water. And so that's what we start to create this list, and this list changes. And what I want you to understand is it does change, and it can change, but it is a choice. You get to make decisions about the things that are important to you. You get to make those decisions. You get to have a say in how it is or what it is that you declare as important in your life. We reviewed this last week, and I want to just put this on the screen so we can see it, that we know that important things are important. We know that, like, taking care of ourselves and our health, we know that giving of ourselves and being good to other people, we know that those things are important. The second thing is we know that important things take time. Nothing easy happens in a hurry. Important things take time, right? That makes sense. We all know this. It's all instinctive. We get it. And the third thing, and this is what I want to talk to us about today, is that we must make time for things that take time. There are things in your life that are never going to happen quickly, and they're not going to happen in a hurry, and we keep trying to rush them. We think that the quickest distance between these two points is a straight line. And what happens is that really begins to define how we use our time and sort of value efficiency. And that was the second exercise I asked you to consider last week. What are the things that are important, and what are the things that you spend time on? These two things, both importance and time, establish both our priorities and they establish our pace. If you have too many things that are important, it begins to squeeze or quicken the pace at which you live. The goal, the idea is that can we find the right things to be important to us and then live at a pace that we're actually designed to live at? And that was the tension that we left with last week. We talked about there's a pace that you and I feel pressured to live. And this is just, I'm going to try to diagram this out to keep me straight today, which you'll be thankful for, I hope. And then there's a pace at which you and I have been designed to live. There's a designed pace of our lives. And I think most of us probably live underneath this pace. Most of us respond to all the different things that we either deem as important or other people have told us are important, and it just quickens the pace faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. And this is the idea behind the series, the idea that we are rushed. And we defined rushed like this. Rushed is not the pace at which you live. Rush, for our purposes, is a force. It's a force that hurries us, it pressures us, and ultimately it overwhelms us. Rush is this subtle thing that sort of pushes on you because there are more things that are important than you have time to do. Or perhaps you're doing a lot of things that you know aren't important. You just can't figure out a way to get the important things on your list. Is there a way in which you and I have been designed to live that allows us to sort of forsake this way of life and embrace a new way, a way that is more fitting for us? So I want to look at a couple places in the life of Jesus. One is found in Matthew 11, and this is really, to me, one of the interesting, or at least one of the most freeing passages. I remember reading this as a kid, a college student particularly, when it just felt so crazy and so stressful and all those things. And for those of you college students who are feeling that way, it doesn't get any better. It just gets worse. It's just more stuff. So it's important that you learn how to live within those things. You know, I think I've shared this last week, but I often talk about this because there are things that you and I can learn to do. We can learn to be more effective. We can learn to be more efficient. We can learn to do better, get better skills, all those things. But if you do this and it just increases our anxiety and our worry, it will absolutely destroy the life that you most want to live. You'll keep thinking that when you get to this point, when you finally hit the X on that marks the spot, then you'll be happy, then you'll be alive, then you'll be able to. And so we keep chasing this, thinking that the faster we can get there, the better off we'll be. And what that leads us to is to start to calculate. When you sense that God wants something for you, when you sense that God wants you to do something, whether it's a business opportunity, maybe you can use your business to do really good things for other people, or maybe it's a way in which you think, oh, if I can get out of school and get this job, then I'll be able to do this, and or maybe if this girl or that guy, if I can do this, then, and as soon as we start to get an idea what this X is, we start to calculate how God ought to do it, how God ought to get it done, how you would do it if you were God. I don't know if you ever had that conversation with God. I have it all the time. God, if I, just wait till he passes. I'm not flying that plane, just so you know. For those of you on other campuses, a big plane is flying overhead. We can't hear anything. But we sort of get this idea, and as soon as we sort of suspect, God, show me what to do, and I'll do it. And as soon as God shows us what he wants us to do, we start calculating how we can get there faster. And there's a different way to live. Remember we talked this last week. We said the pace of which we live that we are pressured into is the pace of achieve. Is it I before E except after C? That's not right, is it? Achieve and you get the idea. We're just this pressure. It's been a tough day. We're pressured to just get more stuff done, even God's stuff. And we feel that. And I mentioned last week, there's another way to live, and I told you I'd tell you what it is this week, and this is to live at the pace of a relationship. This is fundamentally different. It's fundamentally different. It's something that I have been learning and working on and trying to understand much of my adult life. I was in college. I was very driven, very competitive, had a chip on my shoulder, all the things that you need to get ahead in this world. And I don't know what happened or what broke. I refer to myself most often now as a former type A person. Because I remember what it was like to feel the pressure and to want and to demand all of those things because of this pressure right here. And to learn, what if there's another way? And this verse is a part of understanding that. This is where Jesus invites us. And he says this in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. He says, come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. I remember really embracing this as a college student during finals week when all your projects were due. Come to me, all of you who are overwhelmed and stressed and don't know if you're going to make it, I'll give you rest. I don't know what God, I thought God was going to do. Maybe he's going to finish my project for me or draw this or fix that. But it just felt good for him to say, hey, come and I'll give you rest. I thought, okay, I'll come. And then he says this, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am humble in heart, or gentle and humble in heart, and there you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. We pick my one words around here, and I've been doing this for a long time. And a few years ago, my word was yoke. This is a yoke, in case you're wondering what this is. This is a real heavy working or formerly working yoke. It is in my office to remind me of this word. And when Jesus tells us that his yoke is easy, he says, take my yoke on you and you will learn from me. Take my yoke on you and you'll learn from me. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. It's a really powerful picture. And the reason I chose this word that year is because, not because I wanted to, you know, well, there's a lot of reasons, but basically what this is about, to put a yoke, you put it on two animals and then you hitch them to a single force or single place, and these two work in tandem together as they accomplish the work. It was about cooperative work. It was about productivity. I needed some places in my life where I really felt like that I wasn't just looking to the left or to the right trying to chase the next shiny object, but there was a cooperative work. And what's really interesting, when we take his yoke on him, it says, this is where we learn. Take my yoke on you and learn from me. It's not learn from me and then take, it's an act. As we take his yoke, as we cooperate with him, as we walk with him, we learn from him. And you begin to see the pace. You see, when you're yoked to someone, it doesn't matter how fast you want to go, you're only going to move at the pace in which that other force is moving at. To take my yoke upon you, I am gentle and humble in heart. My burden is easy. My yoke is light. This idea that we would be able to cooperate, do cooperative work, to live at a pace in which God has designed us to live, simply because we learn to live, listen how heavy this is, because we learn to live at a pace of a relationship. So what I notice is a couple of things. Why would we be weary and heavy laden? Well, because we live in a world that kind of demands that. What I would submit to you is that we are worn out or tired or burned out because we're carrying loads that we weren't designed to carry. We're running at a pace we weren't created or designed to live at. If that sounds familiar, what do we need to do? We need to come. We need to figure out, how do we come to him and find this place for ourselves? Because rest isn't a function of time. Rest is a function, it's a response to an invitation that Jesus has given us. Come to me and you'll find rest for your souls. Come to me. Rest results from something else. A lot of us, we make time to go to sleep and we don't sleep, we don't rest because our minds are always worried about a million other things. We make time to go to the beach and try to enjoy it. We sit there and we worry about all the other things that might happen. We make time to go sit and have a cup of coffee and we worry about all the things. Rest is not a function of time. It's a function of trust, which is the bedrock of a relationship. It's to walk or to live at the pace of a relationship. Jesus says, I want you to put my yoke on you and learn from me. We learn from him as we walk with him. One of the things that I do when I'm studying and trying to understand the scriptures a little bit differently, I read from a lot of different translations. I typically read out of the New International Version because it sounds like the Bible that I grew up with. And it still is understandable. So I grew up with the King James Version, all the vows and shouts and all that. And so I grew up with that. But this sounds like the Bible, but it's readable. There's another version called The Message, a paraphrase that Eugene Peterson did years ago. And he translates this passage like this. I'll put this on the screen. I remember reading this just one day in my office, or maybe years ago in my office, and reading this and just feeling this sense of relief. And maybe you'll experience the same thing. Let's read it together. Matthew 11, are you tired? Are you worn out, burned out on religion? And by religion, it's not just talking about whatever church you go to or whatever faith you ascribe to. It's are you burned out on trying to get it all perfectly right? Are you burned out? And then he says, this is Jesus' words, come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. I love this next phrase. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I remember reading that phrase for the first time and just going, that feels good. To live in the unforced rhythms of grace, doesn't that just feel good? Live in the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. So as I'm sitting there in my journal looking at this, I'm going, this is a design. This is what we're designed to live in these unforced rhythms. I'm going to spell this one right. of grace. Now, it feels good. What does it mean? Like, what does it mean to really, is that just like, oh, we're unforced rhythms of grace? That sounds good, but how in the world do you do it? Whenever I can't figure something out, I always try to think of what is its opposite? What happens when it doesn't have? What's the opposite of it? Now, obviously, the idea of unforced would be forced, which is what we talked about last week. So that's an easy answer. But what is the opposite of a rhythm? What happens? You know, rhythm is defined by its rest. Do you realize that? If I just went, there's no rhythm. If I went, right? All of a sudden it becomes a rhythm. Why? Because of the rest, because of the stops, because of the pauses. Rhythms fundamentally are defined by the rest. The first is annoying as all get out. The second you can actually start to dance to if you stay with it long enough. So we're going to think about this, and here's how it looks. So if you're not living in the unforced rhythms of grace, you're living under the constant force of proving yourself and pleasing everybody else. So how in the world do you do this? I mean, right, which sounds more familiar to us? Because you know what more than likely fills up our important list? If you want to learn to live at the speed of importance, we have to actually make decisions about this and not let everybody else do it for us. And what I want to tell you, what I would start, is we really want to learn this. If what Jesus is saying is true, if we come to him and he will give us this rest, if we come to him and he will help us recover the life that we were meant to live, if we will come to him and walk with him and learn from him, then it might mean we need to prioritize that relationship over everything else and prioritize it in a way that he intends for it, not just to use him to get here. Because oftentimes, he's not as concerned about getting us here in the shortest distance of amount of time. His looks more like this. And sometimes it's way out here and a host of other things, and somehow all along the way, the question is, does each one of these things matter? And the answer to that question depends on where you think life is found. If you think life is found when you get here, you're going to miss a whole lot of stuff along the way. I want to invite you to learn to live at the speed of relationships. This over here, we end up running at the pace of everybody's expectations and our own expectations on ourselves. Over here, we learn to walk at the speed of trust. There's a documentary about a pastor, it's called Godspeed. It's a greeting or a send-off, and people would be going to do something that wish you Godspeed, meaning that God would meet you where you're going. And he started asking the question, do you know what the speed of God is? And he came up with an answer. He said, the speed of God is 3.5 miles an hour, because that's the speed in which a human being walks. And a lot of us live our lives about an average of 45 miles an hour. We don't walk anywhere. We drive our cars. And we're always going at least 45. Some of you are a lot faster than that. I know. I've been on the roads with you. And the idea is we have to learn how to live at a pace that we keep company under the yoke that Jesus has, that we do purposeful, cooperative work with him. So there's a really important step in this whole thing. He says to learn, to learn. We come to church to learn. We do those things. And learning implies two things. And thing number one is learning implies need. Learning implies that you don't yet know what you need to know. We learn. That requires a level of humility. I don't yet understand this. I've got to embrace it. My kids do this all the time. They come home. They get some homework. It's a new subject. It's a new thing in math. They said, Dad, I can't do this. This is hard. First time. I said, have you ever done this before? He said, no. I said, so you mean to tell me that you just expected the first time you ever did something, you'd be able to do it perfectly? Well, no. Well, that's kind of what you're acting like. We got to learn things. That means in your walk with God, you're going to learn things. You're going to do things and move into things that maybe you didn't intend to or mean to, and you're going to learn. There's going to be correction. It means you're going to step into things. You have to trust things that you did not know or would not have done for yourself because you thought you would do it this way. This would make more sense than this. Learning implies that we have a need that we don't yet know what we ought to know. It implies or requires us to trust. It requires us to trust. We don't do this easily. In fact, it's really interesting because I was thinking about this. A lot of people, you know, they ask, maybe you as well, but there's a lot of talk around mentoring and mentees and that whole relationship in our culture. Every young person's like, I need a mentor, and they're going to find mentors. They need somebody to mentor me. Those are great, great things. But the way most people have treated this in the West, in our efficient, effective, shortest distance between two points, a straight line culture, is that we think of it as fundamentally transactional, as an exchange. I'm going to show up with this person, they're going to teach me. Jesus, you're going to teach me. This person, they're going to teach me. And what I'm going to promise to be a good student in exchange for the information that you're going to give me that's life-changing and life-altering. Tell me what to do. Give me some good principles. Give me some good ideas, and I will execute them so I can have a better life so that these things will happen. And we forget that the benefit, that the life isn't in the information that is exchanged, but it's in the relationship that is available. We forget this. If you're moving at the speed of relationship, the person that you know is far more important than anything else. This is illustrated. There's a story where Jesus goes to the home of Mary and Martha. You might be familiar with this. This is found in Luke chapter 10. And Mary and Martha, Mary's kind of the free, you know, the free spirit, and Martha's like the type A task person. And Jesus is coming, so she's getting her house in order. And when Jesus gets there, Mary sits down when Jesus is just talking with him. And Martha is doing all this thing. She's gotten all these things that have come up. I got to get this in order and this in order. They're on her priority list. They're on her importance list. And she's doing all of these things, and she finally gets so ticked. She's like, I can't believe you're just sitting there doing nothing. She comes over and she yells at Mary, and then she kind of blames Jesus. She says, you know, don't you care, Jesus, that she's like doing nothing, I'm doing all this stuff? And this is Jesus' response to her. He says, oh, Martha, or Mike, or you put your name in there too probably. You're worried and upset about so many things, but few things are needed, really only one. And he's talking about the fact that Mary is sitting at his feet learning from him. Many things are important, but there's really one that is most important. I'll tell you, if I had to think of any single thing that has changed or transformed my life, it's the principle that I learned when I was in high school that says if you are too busy to spend time with God, you are busier than he intends for you to be. I've tried to live out that principle in my life. That no matter what pressure I feel, no matter what I've got going on, no matter how much stuff is pulling at me, to recognize that I need to learn to live at the pace of my relationship with God. He can be trusted with my time and my priorities. He can do that. He can do that. Believe it or not, he has an order of importance for the things that you and I deal with. He is not unaware of financial pressure and all the other complicated things that we deal with as human beings. He's not unaware of those things. He's just saying that you're not going to fix them by getting here to here as fast and as effective as possible. In fact, if you try to do that, you're probably going to litter your life with a lot of regret and so many other things. He's not indifferent or unaware of your business. He's not indifferent or unaware of your family demands. He's not unaware of those things. The question is, can he be trusted with them? So we need to learn this. And here's how I want to do this as we get ready to finish up. What is it? And I want you to answer this question. What is it that you believe or think or suspect is keeping you from God's will? You assume that God has something for you. There's some target on the map that God wants you at. And my question is, what is keeping you from that? For me, it was a list of things. It would range from the wrong major in college. If I was in a different major, I could get there faster. It happens when you try to speed your kids along. If my kids weren't this age, I could be more effective with that. You realize that marriage and kids are not convenient. They don't make you more efficient in your life. And sometimes we can sort of feel like that's what's in the way. God, if you hadn't given me this, if my kids didn't deal with this or have that, if my wife didn't have this or that, or my husband have this, if this person weren't in my way, if this person would have made a different decision, if I were in a different position in this company, if I were in a different business or organization, what is it that you believe is keeping you from God's will? When I was in architecture, I thought it was my profession that was keeping me from God's will. When I was in that other place, I thought it was that position that was keeping me from God's will. You realize that follows you everywhere you go. We almost always think that being somewhere else would be more effective for it. So what I want you to do is I want you to make a list this week. This is your assignment. I want you to take a piece of paper. I want you to make a list. I want you to write on top of it obstacles. These are the things that you believe or think are keeping you from God's will. It might be a person, it might be a decision, it might be a position in a company or an organization, it might be a relationship that you have or don't hear. If I was married, then I would be more effective. If I had kids, then I'd be more effective. If my kids were this, then I'd be more effective. And we just make that list. Then what I want you to do is once you get that list, and here's how you can tell. Some of you went, I don't know if I have a list. Here's how you can tell. If you are blaming anyone or anything for the fact that you're not doing what God wants you to do, you have an obstacle list. Blame is the first response of the fall. To hide and to blame. Second response, hide and blame. If you are blaming anyone or anything because you are not where you believe you ought to be, you have an obstacle list. Write it down. What I want to submit to you is that it's not an obstacle list. Once you get all fired up, ooh, man, all these things, I'm going to take everybody out. Scratch this off and go, this isn't my obstacle list. This is now my trust list. These are the things I have to trust God with in order to see that he might be doing something other than what I thought I ought to be doing or he ought to be doing. When my kids were small, I'm not going to try to combine this story so you don't know which one I'm talking about. But my youngest daughter, we lived in a neighborhood and we had a sliding glass door in our backyard, and we had a kiddie pool in the backyard. You know what the kiddie pools are, right? They're just these little plastic about a foot deep, and you fill them up with a garden hose. They're like freezing cold. They're actually not even fun. They're miserable, but the kids love it for some reason. And so it was in the backyard, and Michaela would come to, I'm not supposed to use your name, my youngest would come to the door, and she was like, when she was a kid, she's pretty sassy now. She was real sassy when she was small. She had her passy in her mouth, her onesie on her. She would oftentimes want to put her bathing suit on, so she'd go get in the pool. She'd just pool. And so she was all fired up, and she'd have like her sippy cup, and she'd have her Cheerios, and she would hold her Cheerios and pull her passy and do her sip, and she had this whole, and then she would press her face and just look at the pool like, I just cannot wait to be there. And so we would decide, her mother would say, I think we're gonna go to the neighborhood pool because this is where you can live fully and freely and alive, and it's not freezing cold. You can actually enjoy it. It's got a big place for kids to play and fountains and all kinds of cool stuff. So from her perspective, she doesn't really speak the language of adult very well, so she's looking at this. You can imagine she wants to be here more than anything else. And she's looking and she's looking. She's like, oh, this is gonna be so good. And all of a sudden, she is scooped up. And then she is strapped in a seat in the back seat of a car, facing backwards, mind you. She's not even good enough to look forward. She's just like this. And she begins to scream and cry and talk about how unfair this is. You know how this happens if you have kids. It is a full-on tantrum. I'm coming out. I can't believe you're trapping me. I can't believe you're keeping me from the thing that I want. If I were you, this is what I would do. I'd open the sliding glass door and let me go. It's the quickest distance between these two points. And you've got to wrangle the other kids and get all the toys and the sunscreen. You slap stuff all over her face while she's screaming and crying. And the whole thing is, you know, and it takes like 13 minutes to get her in the car all the way to the pool until she realizes that, oh my gosh, this is what you intended for me in the first place. We were taking you to the neighborhood pool where you can live fully and freely. Now, what's the problem with this? Right? What's the problem with this? What she did is for 13 minutes... For 13 minutes, which in toddler years is forever. If you ever listen to a toddler scream for 13 minutes, it is a very long time. And she is screaming. And the whole way, every single step along that journey, she is blaming, she is accusing, she is questioning, and she is missing the most important thing. She thinks that the one who gave her life is keeping her from doing what she wants, and it feels like death. And all along the way, for those 13 minutes, she forsakes the relationship that is most important, anything else. Something gets sacrificed in that moment. Here's what happens. Because for you, it's not 13 minutes. It might be 13 years. It might be 20 years. It might be 10 months. It might be 2 years. It might be whatever. But all along the way, you're accusing God that the one who has given you life is keeping you from what you want. And it feels like death. And the whole time he's going, oh, no, 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 come to me. Come, rest isn't here. Rest is here, and it's here, and it's here, and it's here. Because what happens when we get into these patterns where we start to demand that God do things our way, and if he doesn't, we question and threaten and accuse. What we begin to realize is that we sacrifice trust on the altar of our demands. It's the obstacles. It's the things that you think are keeping you from doing what it is that God has called you and created you to do. I want for you to make a trust list. The whole point of this is for us to withdraw, to pull away. We're going to pull away and we're going to pray, and here's what we're going to pray. We're going to teach you a verse. It's in Psalm chapter 86, verse 11. And I want to just put it up there. I want to let you kind of use your imagination for just a minute. It says this. Psalm 86, 11, we're going to get away. We're going to say, God, I want you to, this is what I want you to do. We're going to say this. We're going to say, God, teach me your way so that. Teach me your way so that. How would you fill in that blank? God, teach me your way so I can get to the pool faster. God, teach me your way so I can get to this job or this career or this relationship. Teach me your way so I can do what it is that you want me to do. God, let me learn something from you so I can do something for you. It's not what that verse says at all. It says, Lord, teach me your way that I, put that up there, may rely on your faithfulness. How different is that prayer? Instead of praying for all the uncertainty to disappear, praying for all the lack of control, God, let me handle this. Let me be able to do this. You take on his yoke and you walk with him at the pace in which he moves. And you go to the places that he goes and you say, Lord, teach me your ways. Teach me how you're going in order that I may learn to trust, to rely on your faithfulness. If you want to be free, you have got to stop calculating. You know how to stop calculating? You do, don't you? It's next week. Let's pray. Father, I just want to echo that prayer. We want you to teach us your way so we can do things faster, more effectively, more brilliantly, more godly. But God, you have invited us to pray, teach me your ways, that we might come to trust, to rely on your faithfulness. God, I pray that as we are considering this week, that we believe there are things that are keeping us from what it is that you want to do. And Father, rather than seeing those as obstacles, let us see those as places that we can trust, and we stop sacrificing our trust on the altar of our demands. God, I ask that you would do that in us, that we would be able to live at the pace and in the way that you have created us to live with you, for you. And I ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.